It's certainly a gasp-worthy prize for a book, $17,000. Yes, about $17,000. But the thing is, this book is printed on gold foil. It comes with its own stand. It's signed by the Dalai Lama. And the pictures within show the heart of an ancient and extremely important culture. The book is called Murals of Tibet, and its creator, Thomas Laird, joins me from a studio in London to tell me all about it. Welcome to the Hub on Art, Thomas. Thank you so much for joining me. How did you come to do this project?
You know, I spent 35 years in Nepal, and during that time I became friendly with a lot of Tibetan painters and monks, and over the course of many decades I began to pay a lot of attention to the murals I was seeing in the temples in exile in Nepal. And then slowly, I began to work on a book with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, The Story of Tibet. And it was during that, really, that I began to understand how important the murals were, what a center stone of Tibetan culture they were. And that's what set me on the path.
These murals, can you describe where you find them in Tibet?
The murals are in every temple and every small nook and cranny around temples and palaces all over Tibet. Many have been lost, but there are scattered all over Tibet, there are really great hidden treasures. It's 1,000 years of Tibetan art history that we're looking at, and it's widely scattered thousands of miles apart. So you find them in temples, in palaces, in fortresses. Nearly all of the murals in the book are in temples.
What medium was used in the murals, and has that changed, or did that change over those 1,000 years?
The practice of making the walls and then painting them, it seems to be pretty consistent for over a long period of time. You mix wool, sheep's wool, horse hair, into the mud that you're plastering the final surface of a wall with. And you mix that, actually it goes into the wall when you're building it, so that the outer surface of the mural that's on the wall is bound into the wall itself with different fibers. And then once you've created that thick surface, then they put a fine river sand onto it, and then they polish it, and then they put a plaster surface on it, and then they polish it with fine river stones, with round river stones. So you're creating ultimately a dried plastered wall, and then the master comes up and draws charcoal lines on it, and then his atelier begins to paint according to the color instructions that he leaves.
How did they find those colors? Because the colors, even now, are still so vivid.
First of all, the colors are minerals, almost all of them, the traditional, cochineal, the traditional colors that are imported, malachite, they're imported from all over the world. I think one of the reasons this has endured so long is that the Tibetan technique for doing this often includes, they make like a glue from hoofs and horns, and they keep that heated. And they keep it with just a little flame under it, and they mix in the minerals into that. So it's like your nails. When you click on the surface of the murals, you see that it's like a nail-like surface. It may not be, it may not have that nail-like surface on all murals, but on the finest murals, you're very aware of that surface.
Yeah.
And on others, it's sort of a drier. A drier surface. There's many different surfaces, but the techniques throughout seem to be pretty similar.
Were there any of these murals that were particularly hard to access?
All of them.
Okay.
These are in pitch black rooms. There are no windows. It's very dark. And the locals, sometimes aren't really sure what you're up to. You have to spend time with the locals and work with local people to gain access. But I was going back and forth out of Tibet over a decade, and people got used to seeing my face around and realized, I was just taking photographs. And so it's just a long process. And there are times when you go to a temple and people will just say, no, sorry, no photography.
Is there one particular mural that you feel would work well on the radio for you to be able to describe? And if there is, could you please describe it?
The cover of the book is a Buddha, the Shakyamuni, the historic Buddha, from painted around 1427 in the Kumbum. And one of the reasons I think that image, that mural, was chosen was because of the emotional power in the face of the Buddha. That image is about 45 by 90 inches. And so when I captured it, I do multi-image capture, so I was capturing hundreds of images to stitch that together, and then I would sit at home afterwards. So it's a day to capture the images, and then a month to put them together. And when I was sitting in front of that Buddha, I began to see things that I didn't see at first, and to understand things that I didn't understand immediately when I was in the room, in the dark room with it. The eyes are half closed. The hands are raised in a teaching mudra. The Buddha is surrounded by a rainbow, like a huge aura of rainbow radiating from him. And his face radiates an intense peacefulness, and it's a very powerful emotional experience to see that. One of the things I've understood over time with that Buddha and with others is people think of this as Oriental art, as something different from them. Not everyone seems to know that the first Buddha image that we have is on a coin of Kanishka I. It's around the time of Christ, and it appears in a Greek city-state in northwest India, Pakistan. And so it was a Indo-Greek king who put the first image of a Buddha, who commissioned the first image of a Buddha. And on that coin, it's written in Greek letters. And because they're Greek, we can read them. I mean, it's a cognate. It says Buddha. So there are deep links between Buddhist art and European art. This is world art. And slowly, when I would spend a lot of time looking at a Buddha every day, 8 hours a day, you know, working on it, I would begin to understand that that's part of what's up there on the wall. Is he's reaching out to you, he's speaking to you, he's a motivation for you. The peace that, you know, is there in his eyes is something also that is in all of us. You know, greed, anger, ignorance, lust, and pride tends to dominate body, speech, and mind for all of us all the time. However, there are moments of peace, moments of reflection in our life, and I think that when you see that in the face of the Buddha, you realize, oh, I could respond more with more wisdom, perhaps. It's very inspiring. Some of the art can be very inspiring in that way. And so, yes, that Buddha, that 1427 Buddha that I call the Rainbow Buddha in Gyantse is perhaps one of my favorites.
Well, that's such an exquisite description. Thomas, thank you so much. I think that worked perfectly for radio. That was incredible.
Great.
As an aging reader, I sometimes have to wear glasses if I'm reading print that's very small. And when I was looking at the Tashin website and looking at the pictures of your book, and then I looked at the price, and I couldn't quite believe the price, and I thought that there was something wrong with my eyes. And so I put my glasses on and realized that actually the price really is, as I read it, which is around 17,000 Australian dollars. Why?
Well, I hope you did your math right. It's 12,000 US. And so, yes, I'm assuming that's around 17,000.
Yeah, you know, give or take a few thousand, but it's more than $45.
Yes.
So why the decision to go down this luxury route?
Oh, no, not luxury. The word is not luxury. The word is archive.
Much better. Thank you.
This is not a book. This is an archive in a box. This is a paper museum. This is a paper backup of a chapter of World Heritage. First of all, we have these huge images, and so you need a huge book. The book is 70 by 50 centimeters. When you open it, it's a meter across. They've used gold, 24 karat gold, in printing some of the pages in the book. This book was intentionally an attempt to create the most perfect representation of this, because the Dalai Lama said to me, Tom, this is a wonderful work you're doing, but why should I sign 1,000 pages? And I said, Your Holiness, because of human greed. When we make this book so beautiful, so such an incredible archive that you can get lost into it with the greatest printers, when we use gold, when your signature is added to this, in fact, you are making this financially more valuable. And if that's the way of the world. And so think 300 years from now, when all those murals in Tibet are likely to be gone, or many of them, imagine that from this 1,000 copies, maybe 300 copies have survived.
Yeah.
And they're scattered all over the world. And one day there's a fire in a library. Which book are the people going to run in and save first? We can count on human greed. We know that they will save the most important one, the most financially valuable one, even if they don't know anything about Tibet.
Yeah.
That's actually, in Tibetan, that's called skillful means. We're using human greed to preserve the heritage of Tibet.
Thomas, what does it feel like to be looking at artwork which is so old and so important?
You know, for me, when I see these paintings in the temples, it can be a really transformative experience. I have visions. When I spend a week with a mural capturing it, and then I spend months with it rendering it, you know, it's a strange state I fall into. I begin to hear the voices of the people who made it, and I realize that I'm spending more time with these murals than anyone except the people who made it. And so I hear them. I don't know how to say that, like a rustling in the distance. And then when I watch mothers with their children strapped to their back coming through the temples, and I see them bring their children and bump their heads against the murals. They're seeking the power that they feel that the murals are imbued with the spiritual power that's radiating down from the centuries, and a little piece of that comes to them when they touch it. If I stand in a temple for a week, I see the stream of pilgrims coming in, bowing to the walls and leaving. And then it's like, as a, you know, it speeds up, and I can see that stream of humanity, a blur, like a river flowing through that building over 1,000 years. We are the river banks through which this art flows. This art is in our minds. Its real life is in our minds, and it flows from the minds of the dead through those walls, through my cameras, through my hands, through those pages, into your mind, and from your mind and from that book into the minds of the future. All art has its real life in generations of human minds, and to be involved in that process, it's extremely moving.
Thomas, thank you so much. Are you okay?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that this has brought up such emotions
for
you. But
no,
thank you
for
sharing it.
I'm not sad.
Yeah. So I can actually hear that you're not sad. But hey, I'm British, so I have to say sorry. Right?
No. I'm not sad when I speak about this. I'm overfilled with an amazing gratitude and joy. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I hope that others, when they come to this work, get some sense of that.